Hi, this is Kelly Edwards. I am at the City of the Richmond City Registrar's Office, excuse me. I'm also joined by
Bobby Crowell and Amy Hunter.
And we are meeting with
Keith Ballmer, General Registrar of Richmond City.
Okay. So I'll just start. First, we have a few general questions. What is your biggest concern about the upcoming election?
Well, this is my first big election. So my biggest concern is just making sure that I conduct it in a way that is, I'll tell you what, my biggest concern is, so in the June election, my results were a little bit late from my precincts, and I got a few phone calls about that. So we're focusing on this election. Is the timely reporting the results from our precincts. That's my big thing.
Did you find out why things were coming in late to you last time?
I did find out why. I wasn't happy with what they told me, my precinct chiefs, but yeah. So what happens is that at the end of the night, the chiefs get so concerned with all of the different things that they have to do in order to close down the election. So it's quite a bit going on.
I'm sure.
And then they have to adjudicate the results on the statement of results. They have to make sure that, you know, everything's taken down. And they also delegate different responsibilities throughout that time. And for a couple of them, they completely forgot that they had to call in their results, which is the only way I can get them. So that delay led to me not having all of my numbers, which was very frustrating.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, personnel, and training needed to run an effective election in November?
I do.
Okay.
I don't know how the smaller localities that you've been to have answered that question.
But, yes.
Not all. I understand in being in Richmond that I have
staff
resources that other places don't.
That has been one of their, you know, because a lot of those smaller counties only have the registrar and that's it. Yeah. And I'm finding that in those, staff, like, at least to have one or two people would be nice to help out, but. Yes.
You mean working in the registrar's office?
Yeah, it's just them.
Oh, yeah.
That's
just,
it.
It's just them and a lot of them.
They don't even have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just them.
I have. Like
I think
20,
Charles
I have like
City County is that way.
Yeah. And, you know, other places that she's referring to have one.
Mm-hmm.
They're lucky to make up one.
Prince Edward has one other, and she says she's one of the very few that have, you know, other than bigger locales like here that have an actual full-time worker with her in the registrar's office.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just them.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it can be kind of interesting how different it looks, a registrar's office from one locality to the next and next, just all dependent upon just the number of, you know, registered voters, how big mm-hmm. the locality is. Yeah. You know, we're all required to do the same thing, but man, it looks totally different.
All right, so the county election board is supposed to consist of two Democrats and a Republican under a Democrat governor, but in some areas, boards have had trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead, or another Democrat. What is the situation in this county or city?
We have two Democrats and one Republican.
Okay.
The chairman and the vice chairman are my two Democrats, and then my secretary is a Republican. So that has never actually been a case here in Richmond. We've always had, even before I was a registrar, I worked in this office mm-hmm. for years and years, and we always had the legally required representation from both parties.
Okay. So it's always been two and one.
Always been two and one.
Depending on reflecting who is in the governor's
exactly.
mansion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Okay. I'll just let y'all jump in. If I don't hear y'all, then I'm moving
okay.
on. Okay. What about precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans?
Well, here's the thing, though. We don't know. So the law says that the Democrats and the Republican election officers they have to come from the parties.
Right.
Right. So if the, I mean, we have hundreds of election officers, but our two parties haven't historically recommended election officers. Like, they have to tell us, this person is a Republican, this person is a Democrat, and on down the line. So if we don't get their recommendations on who we should appoint as Republican and Democrats, then we have to appoint these people as independents.
What was the last thing you said?
Independents.
I don't think we care if you take that off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, we really don't.
And I'm hard of hearing a little, even though I had a hearing aid then, but thank you.
Okay, all right. It'll probably sound better on but yeah, so if we don't get buy-in from the heads of the two parties, then, which is, you know, kind of where we are right now, mm-hmm. that means that our hundreds and hundreds of election officers are independents. And that's because that's legally the board can bring on, they can hire election officers, but they can't designate them as a DOR. That has to come from the party.
Okay.
Now, do you ever ask the individual election officers whether they are Democrats or Republicans,
but the law doesn't say, I mean, we can ask them, sure, but we can't designate them there because the law says
it has to come from the party.
And it has to be a registered member of the party, is what you're saying.
No, I'm saying that the chair of the local Republican Party and Democratic Party have to send us a list at the beginning of the year.
And that list
contains
their members.
Or who they view as their members.
Right.
That can go in to do that. So whoever heads the GOP or the DNC down in the city of Richmond has a list that they should be sending over with people that are trained to be election officers. And this is who they want in there to do this observing. And
so it sounds like the parties are maybe falling down on that particular job.
Correct.
Something to
bring
up to Hayden.
Yeah, so it is like the Republican Party in the city of Richmond will have a list of their members.
It doesn't necessarily have to be members, I don't think. It just has to be people who
vote one way or the other.
Are affiliated, like have historically supported Republicans or that Hayden feels.
And they need to be trained to be election office. Right. I mean,
we do the training.
You will do the training. I think we get to that
too. We just need the names.
Okay. All right. Is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round or mostly near elections?
So they're legally, their purview is elections.
Okay.
So when there's an election going on, whether we're planning for it or whether we are actually in the midst of an election, then that's when the electoral board, that's when their responsibilities kick in.
Okay.
And that includes training, that includes the programming of the voting machines. And of course, it includes election day and the canvas and everything that comes afterwards.
But, right.
When there's no election, then it's just me running the show, basically.
Okay.
Now, how many months ahead of time does that gear up? Because I know in Virginia, we never get a break from elections. We've got statewide elections on odd years and federal elections on even years. So does that mean they're pretty much always working, or is there like a 6-month break each year that they?
There's a 6-month break each year, non-presidential years. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know many states that are.
I don't know any that has elections every single year.
Yeah.
I think we've got an interesting system. Okay. So now we're going to move to a few questions on the voter roll.
Yep.
Yeah.
When was the last time the voter file in your county or city was scrubbed or cleaned?
So the scrubbing of the voter rolls, that's done at the state level. And it's done monthly. And they let us know at the end of the month. But it's definitely done monthly. And they send out a notice, a communication to all the registrars saying, the voter rolls are scrubbed. Now, of course, they don't say the word scrub. But
right.
Now, Are there parts of the law that have requirements for the city and county registrars to go through and send notifications to people who haven't voted in 3 election cycles or 4 election cycles? Is that how it happens?
Yeah, we have a process in which we notify, not if they've not voted, but the way we, our big thing in which we, you know, adjudicate the voter rolls at the local level along, so we work with the state, what's called the NCOA process, in which it happens every summer, the National Change of Address, in which we have, for people who have been suspected of moving, we notify them through the address that they provide to the post office to update their voter registration. Okay. But as far as people who have not voted, you know, we don't send out anything to anybody who has not voted, if that's what you were asking.
Yeah, well, yes, I can't not remember what Virginia law says, but I know several states have laws that if you do not vote in 3 consecutive federal elections, for instance, might be one criteria. You become inactive, and the registrar sends you a letter notifying you of that, telling you you will be removed from the voter rolls if you don't let them know you're still at your address and you wish to be registered, because they suspect that people moved or died or.
Right. Now, we do have an inactive process, okay. So we do designate voters who are inactive. With that.
Okay, and how many elections have to go by between them voting?
It's 2 federal.
I think it's 2, that's what I remember it being.
Okay, and what happens to those inactive voters? How do you eventually scrub them off if necessary? I mean, how do you make sure that, for instance, they haven't died?
Right, so they are, I can't remember if the registrar, forgive me since I've been a registrar for a couple of months, yeah. I can't remember if the registrar sends notifications or does it come from the state. That's what I'm not sure of, because I haven't actually been involved in that process yet.
Okay, but is there a process to make sure that only people who are alive and still living in the state are voting?
Yeah, so that's part of the scrubbing that's done monthly. The state has, they get information from the...
I think this is my next question too.
Okay.
I'll ask
this. The name of the
does the health department, coroner, or Bureau of Vital Statistics?
Bureau of Vital Statistics. Thanks.
Send a list of deceased people to your office every month so they can be removed from the voter roll.
they send it to the Department of Elections.
Okay, to the state.
Uh huh. So yeah, that's part of the monthly scrubbing.
That is the answer I've gotten. Is that the state is the one who.
Okay.
Right. Removes them. That's from
that
the last.
That makes sense. That makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah,
but what happens with the inactive voters? I mean, do they just perpetually stay on the rolls? Is there a process for removing them after a time?
I believe after. I don't want to misspeak.
Okay.
That might be one I have to look up and send you the answer to.
I can do a follow up with that.
Yeah, do a follow up with that one.
Okay.
And what was the question? Following up on again.
It
Not
was
Brian,
what
I'm
is
sorry.
The status? Do voters sit on an inactive status indefinitely? Or is
what happens to them eventually, and on what time frame?
Mm-hmm.
And I can email your secretary the follow-up question
sure.
if you want to do that. Wait,
another question does occur to me that's probably a little bit esoteric. what happens if someone dies out of state? I mean, would our Bureau of Vital Statistics necessarily know? I mean, say someone's grandma who lives in Richmond goes to visit relatives in Georgia, and God forbid she had a heart attack and died in Georgia, they would have her death record from Georgia, not necessarily from Virginia. What happens in that instance?
Wouldn't it have to be?
It would have to be filed here.
It would still be filed
where,
in Virginia.
Where she lives.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, she may have died there, and maybe like the coroner in Georgia signed off, but vital statistics, I believe, in the city she lives in, and I cannot say that word right, but it's a little bit.
Y'all are making me uncomfortable. I'm 85 years old and I'm from Georgia. I'm sorry.
So I think, though, in order to get death certificates, et cetera, I think Georgia would notify the state where she lives in, but it's something that we can definitely check on.
That would be wonderful. And I ask because of this. I'm doing a family genealogy. Mm. And I know that in the genealogy I'm doing, my relatives pretty much all have lived in Virginia, but I've got death certificates from Mexico, from Georgia, from Florida, from all sorts of locations where that state issued the death certificate. And I'm just wondering if there is a process by which the home state's Bureau of Vital Statistics is notified when someone dies in another state.
That sounds like it'd be a question for them, but I would have.
But I've written it down, and I don't mind digging into that even.
Okay. That's the only reason it occurred to me to ask, because I know that other places will issue death certificates for Virginia residents. So.
Okay. When was the last time the clerk of court submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
When's the last time the clerk of court submitted a
list of individuals,
who declined
to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
Okay, so add that question to the email.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure about that
one. Okay. Well, now, I'm assuming from the way the question's worded that jury duty is, you come up for jury duty because they have
to
register
to vote.
Right.
As a voter.
Yeah.
You want to follow up on that?
I got to follow up on that one.
The majority of the other ones did. None of them have ever had it. I think one county did, and it was not correct. The person was a citizen. Ended up, that was just a snafu. So.
Yeah, that's a question I literally have to ask the court.
Okay. When was the last time you had access to the national change of address list or any other change of address list?
Yeah, I think I may have jump into that earlier with my response, but it's done each summer. So the last time we would have done it would have been in July. It was July. every year.
That'll be my new thing I learned today. I didn't know there was a national change of address list.
I didn't either.
Yeah. It's a good thing, though.
Yeah.
So they can always find you.
Are you confident that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Here's another one for you. And I always like to see their expressions.
Is this esoteric too?
How many households in your locality have more than 7 individuals registered at the same address?
Whoa. Oh, my goodness. How did the other restaurants answer? I have no way of knowing that. I don't know.
That's how they answered.
Oh, okay.
Could you search by address to see how many registered voters you have at any given address?
I don't know if that's a search. It might be.
Might be something that you could sort.
It might be something I can sort through various.
I could probably write a program that did that.
Oh, you had a background in. You have a background in.
In research, and in. I can write short programs. I know a little bit of Java, a little bit of HTML.
Okay. A little bit of Java.
You know,
okay.
So.
All
right.
So if there's a way to do that, of course. And I will put that on our follow-up. We would love to get that number if possible.
Okay.
So, during registration, how do you verify that voters are citizens?
Well, when they sign off on that application, they are attesting to the fact that they are a citizen. And that's basically legally all we can do. Okay. Says, yep, you said you are. It's not a great answer, but that is the law.
some of these I didn't write before now.
Yeah, you was like, okay, I'm going to answer this one, but I know how it's going to go.
All right, moving on, concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and integrity of voting machines and the 2020 elections.
Yep.
There are three types of voting machines used in Virginia. Can you tell me which machines you use?
We use ES&S.
What is it called?
ES&S,
yes.
And that's ballot scanning, I think they are.
We use it for ballot scanning.
Ballot scanning, okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, is that ES, the letter N-S, or is it ES ampersand?
ES-N-S.
Ampersand. Yeah, okay.
Who calibrates the voting machines, and can you kind of explain the process?
So what happens before each and every election is that we do a mock election. It's a very small little mock election. It's called an LNA. And logic and accuracy, and the purpose of it is to test each and every voting machine and make sure that they're tabulating the results correctly. So we slide in ballots that have votes that we have selected candidates on, and then we do our little report at the end. And in any machine in which the numbers come off not accurate, we don't use those machines in the election.
Okay. And so there's no way to fix the machine.
Well, yeah, machines be fixed by our vendor. That would be a calibration error. Uh-huh. If there's an issue with that, then we would send that machine down to the to our vendor.
Is that Print Select?
Yep, Print Elect.
Print Elect, that's it. Thank you.
Have you ever done varieties of different voting block numbers, like first, 500 voters or 6,000 voters, to see if you get the same accuracy with the lower number that you get with the higher number?
We do all different types, to try and, make it as, I guess that's the best way to ensure accuracy, uh-huh. is that we have different ways in which we do the ballots. So, for instance, we make sure that every candidate gets multiple votes, and it's no rhyme or reason or rhythm to it. It's I guess it's a way in trying to make sure that machine is accurate by having just a whole different number of ways in which we are voting on these ballots, if that makes sense. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
I'm not sure either. Tell you the truth, the reason for asking the question is, worst case scenario, the machines have been rigged. At a certain volume of votes, then they start flipping or something like that. Is there any way what you do would catch that?
Well, so as far as votes flipping, which never happened, but these machines are tested at the state level first. Before we are allowed to use them. Mm-hmm. So they've gone through the state certification process.
Is it the same process that you go through?
It's a little bit more intense.
Okay.
Because it's the state. And those regulations, the state board has implemented. So it's a bit more tougher, which it should be. And then by the time it comes to us, then we do our own, and again, our LNA is the way that we test our machines for every election. Again, I still don't know if I'm answering your question.
What's your normal failure rate for those machines? How many do you normally have to send off in any given election to be recalibrated?
Good question. We haven't sent off any.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Has not happened since mm-hmm. you've been here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there normally a time frame in which the system wears down? In some way that you can expect a failure rate of X percent after 10 years of use, or
10 years would be, that'd be quite a long time. We haven't been given, so I guess we've been using these machines since, I want to say 2013, I think, the DS200s. That's a conversation that we have with the vendor just about, that's my phone, sorry.
That's okay.
Thought you had a kitten in
here. My daughter put a weird little apple in my hand. It throws me off every time I'm talking to somebody important. The vendor who sells us the machines, ES&S, they do maintenance checks. And that's our way of knowing that, you know, which machines, because yeah, some machines just need to be taken out of production because, you know, they just, there's a bit more wear and tear on. But the vendors actually help us, you know, identify any specific machines that may be problematic, and we just don't use those. Or we send them down to get further looked at by the vendor. But as far as a time frame as to when they would actually like need to be taken off the market, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. Again, I rely on the vendor for that.
So you're really dependent anything. On the vendor for the efficacy of.
I mean, they make the machines.
Right. Right. And it's my understanding that they are the only ones that can actually get into the machines.
They're the only ones that can get into it. Absolutely.
It's kind of like a black box. They have very proprietary code, which seems kind of odd to me. It should be open because it's a public process. And that's not the only thing that I think should be open. For instance, the building codes in Virginia are proprietary.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You're not allowed to have the DHCD, the Department of Housing and Community Development, can't just send you blocks of what they say because you have to purchase the books to get them. And it's $500 per set. That always bothered me that something like the building codes would be proprietary. It's just another example of something that is proprietary, but really it seems because it's a matter of public record, it should be open to the public.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. No.
Go off.
Do you invite party representatives to witness the calibration?
I do.
Do they come?
No.
Okay. Wow.
Now, I will say that recently.
Maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. So you guys don't get too mad at Hayden.
I'm not mad at you at all.
No, I said Hayden.
Oh,
Hayden.
Okay.
He has sent a representative the last cycle.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in his defense, actually, the local party. Mm-hmm. Just got reinstituted like 4 or 5 years ago. It was defunct. There was no active city Republican Party. It had lost its charter because of not functioning. And
we just weren't doing anything?
Yeah. There was nothing at all.
There was nothing. And
there was no real members of the GOP. I don't think there was anybody running it.
They weren't filing paperwork with the state on time. They were not
doing nothing.
Yeah.
They literally were not functioning. And I don't know if you know Leon Benjamin.
I know Leon. Yeah. Okay. He used to be the head of it.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, see, he was the first head after they started it.
Yeah.
Restarted it. So Hayden took over from Leon.
Yeah.
So I guess they both kind of, you know, on the job learning what to do.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but at least things got, once Leon became head of the part of the city party, paperwork got put in on time so that the party wasn't constantly being fined by the state.
And see, I learned something every day too because I had no idea either.
Yeah.
That all that had.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it was a mess.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did I expect all this, these questions? I expect this stuff to get better then.
Okay. Are voting machines ever connected to the internet? No. All right, and if they're not connected to the internet, how and when are they updated? And I think we might have covered that a little bit in the previous question. That's when they come in before the elections.
Well, they're updated with new software, which we're due for one now. They don't just institute new software on machines. It has to be certified by the state first.
Okay.
And the state just... they just gave the vendors a deadline, I believe. They kept extending because of COVID, but I believe that new deadline is like next summer.
And
so next year I'm going to get a software update on my machine.
And so when they, t- to put the names of the people who are running on the ballots, of course. Yep. How do they come into, if that's not connected, if they're not connected to the internet, then how does that information, how does the software happen? How does the information for the voters happen? You know, how does that get into the machine so it knows? Is that during the calibration that that's done for the next election, or?
Well, that's how we know everything's working.
Okay.
Like, that's literally how we know it's working.
Okay, so, all right. I think I just confused myself, but then I unconfused myself. So.
Right. So the ballots are printed, created, and they're printed. And then to make sure that that machine knows exactly who's on the ballot.
Right.
Because it can't tabulate the results if it doesn't know. We okay. can't understand who's on the ballot.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what the whole purpose of the LNA is.
The cost of the machines, does that come out of the city's pocket or?
Comes out of, I have a budget. That, but I still need to, if I'm in the mood to replace old machines or poll books, that's a discussion that needs to happen with the electoral board, because that falls under elections. So I can't just do it on my own. And then I also have to speak to, the registrars would have to speak to the governing bodies. So for me, it'd be city council. Because they tend to be expensive.
I was going to say, a lot more expensive than hand-counted ballots.
Well, just the voting machines we use today are expensive.
Yeah.
All right. So many changes in election procedures were introduced in response to the COVID pandemic, and some people have argued that these changes weakened the integrity of the election process. As an election professional, do you think the changes made in the election process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened election integrity, strengthened election integrity, or made no change in election integrity?
I think the biggest thing that it did, and because of when they were instituted, caused confusion amongst the voters. I mean, that's absolutely, because, you know, I was working at the state at that time last year, and, you know, we're talking August, September, new stuff, new laws are being introduced, right? And it was, you know, I can remember all the phone calls I had with voters. It's like, wait, are we using the witness signature or are we not? it really did. And again, it was, I guess they did what they had to do, but within the time constraints that they had to do it in. But like introducing new changes to the elections on the eve of the election is going to cause confusion. And that's what we saw in 2020.
Okay, that's confusion at the level of the people involved with putting on the elections.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think this question is more geared towards the general public. What is their attitude about all that change?
I was speaking from the point of view of the general public.
It confused the voters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because,
okay.
You know, my old role at the state, I talked to voters all the time.
Uh-huh.
And it was a constant, I don't want to say battle, but just trying to get them to know what was going on, because unless they're following this, they won't particularly know, right? And again, who's your random person is not following the intricacies of election legislation that's going on in the state.
Right.
I wouldn't be following if I wasn't doing this job. that was the biggest thing. Also, you know, last year, you know, it was a lot of new legislation that passed. Period. With the, you know, excuse voting and absentee voting.
Oh.
And just other things that were introduced last year. And then, you know, there was a special session in August last year. And then some other stuff was introduced. And, you know, it was all just trying to just keep the public from being just so confused, not confused and not overwhelmed, you know. But, that's what happened now from my vantage point last year.
Okay. Did you receive any funding or in-kind contributions for training staff, voter education, or equipment, or any other purpose from outside the state of Virginia?
No.
Okay. Effective July 1st, 2021, Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballots for any election during a declared state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. How are you training your staff to ensure that there is a signature match for the upcoming elections?
Right, it's a good question. Because what the staff part is easy. It's the people that we bring in to help with absentee. Mm-hmm. That's what they train the CAP team, because they are just three straight elections now. They used to not looking for a witness signature. So we're gonna have training coming up in the next. I haven't nailed it down yet, but there will be, let's see, maybe early part of September, which I'm going to sit down with them and just basically just explain that, okay, you're now looking for the witness signature again.
Right.
Because the state of emergency is over.
Now, when those ballots are opened, are there processes in place to make sure that there are observers there and not just election officials? To watch the opening of the envelopes.
Yeah, so the...
I think that might be down on one of these.
Oh, are we jumping ahead?
No, it's fine. You can go ahead because I can find the question and write this down.
Okay, I'm going to let you find the question first so you can get what I...
I think there's a general one about observers.
Okay.
But I'm talking specifically about when the envelopes are opened. Mm-hmm. Because I know this past year... there were several localities where there was confusion and perhaps that didn't happen.
Yeah, well, it certainly happened in Richmond City because I made sure of it. But what you're referring to is so that when the envelope returns from the voter,
yes,
we have one process in place, which is you open the outer envelope and then you're exposed to the what's called the B envelope, which is the inner envelope. The inner envelope contains the ballot.
Okay.
And what staff is doing is that they are checking for maybe a missing witness signature, maybe the voter didn't sign, maybe they left off the address, you know, looking for things that will cause that ballot to be rejected, and then they are to notify that voter, which is called a QR process. Then if the ballot is good to go, then the next step is to prepare for what's called pre-processing. And pre-processing is when we open up the envelope with the ballot in it. And yes, that has to help. Well, for me, it's what I wanted is that I had election officers who, again, it's kind of tricky, but you know, they electoral board. So I had election officers who I had the, you know, reach out to the parties to say, even though they weren't appointed as Republicans, I had Republican election officers. And the same thing for on the other side. So that I know that the election officers who was working on pre-processing represented both parties.
Okay.
But I did extend that offer invite to party representatives who want to come and observe.
Okay.
To who?
Party representatives who wanted to observe.
Now, which part of the process were they allowed to observe? Were they allowed to observe the opening of the envelopes with the where they could observe whether a witness signature was on the envelope and whether the voter had signed and put their address as required by law?
No, just the just the opening of the ballot.
Okay. So there's no process in place to have observers there to witness whether the envelopes were properly signed.
Correct. There's no, the code doesn't say anything about that. The code says that you should absolutely have representation when you're opening the ballot, but not for just when the envelope returns to the office and they're being logged in. Because one thing, they're being logged into Varis. In Varis, it's only available for staff to look into Varis.
Okay.
Was there any time during the last I wrote stuff here too. What are the chain of custody procedures for the ballot drop boxes?
For the ballot drop boxes, mm-hmm. Only my staff. Let's see, I have a drop box here, and I have one at Southside Community Center. So the chain of command is that I have staff go to the drop box offsite, and they're the ones who take the ballots out and they transport them back to the office. And then they're logged into the system, into Varis.
Okay. All right. So the next question on that, Was there any time during the last election cycle when your drop boxes did not have video monitoring?
Not that I'm aware of.
So wherever there is a drop box, there's a video camera?
That I'm aware of.
Okay. Who installs those?
Well, we have video here. Yeah, I don't know about the one that's at Southside Community Center. You know, I actually don't know.
Because the way I'm reading the question, they're talking about the location of the drop boxes before they're picked up. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So you don't know if they have one at Southside Community Center?
That might be another question you need to email me about.
Okay. And then, if there is video, if they have cameras on them, who's responsible for reviewing the video, and were party observers present during the review of the video?
No, they only are, no to both of those questions, I guess.
Okay.
I no reviewing of the video unless we have reason to.
Okay.
And then there's nobody's there with us when we're reviewing them.
I guess what the concern would be is somehow somebody got hold of ballots,
or I guess if you have one,
and they
have
a lot of different people,
or if the drop box has been tampered with in any sort of way,
yeah,
it damaged,
or somebody's putting in 20 ballots.
That's it. That's what I would that's what I would think it would be better. So you had three people visit that ballot box, but you had 27 ballots in the box. That's clearly an issue, but. That's what the video would come into play for, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just wondering if it's being reviewed, you know, frequently, or but you're saying unless there's a reason to view it, they're not right now.
Correct.
Okay.
So and unless you have a suspicion about it, okay.
And so I will follow up on the other one though about the video monitoring on all of the drop boxes. All right. And then. This back here before I get everything.
Keep everything in order.
I swear. All right. To strengthen public confidence in the integrity of elections, we hope to expand our observation efforts and just have a few questions about election pages, nonpartisan observers, and party observers.
Go for it.
Would you provide training and support or designate us to provide training and support for an election day page program? As described in 24.2-604.3.
I've thought about it, the page program. I'm intrigued by it. So I guess that question is a maybe.
Maybe.
Okay.
Would you authorize nonpartisan election observers with the same rights as party representatives? As described in 24.2-604.5A.
If it's described in that code section, then yes. I'm going to do what that code section tells me to do.
Well, the rights that are described are for the election observers.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, would you give nonpartisan elections?
I'm following the what
code,
it says in that code.
Okay, so the answer is yes.
All right.
Correct.
Well, he's saying if it's described in this code, then that code section he would. And most of, I will say on these, I'm usually not checking these when I do these with anybody. I'm usually writing a paragraph over here because these are typical. I've found it that it's hard for them to say yes or no.
Okay.
So write it here on the side, and then when I type type it up, figure out how to add a little section here. We'll talk about on tonight's call. Would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
Ooh, I can run it by me one more time.
Would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations? So international nonpartisan observers from recognized and election monitoring organizations.
If I'm allowed by law to do so, yes. Man, I would have to look into that one.
If you are allowed or if you're required?
If I'm
If I'm allowed by law, yes.
Allowed rather than required.
Which, to me, that means the same thing. If I'm required or allowed by law.
Right.
If what the law says is what I'm going to do.
Gotcha.
I haven't seen...
I happen to know that the UN is working on this.
Okay, because I haven't... Like, our code... I haven't seen anything like that in the code section.
No. Okay. So, your answer is yes, if the law...
If the law allows me to.
Have your local party chairs been notified that they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it is open and receiving in-person absentee ballots? Have your local party chairs been notified that they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it is open and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
Meaning that have I notified
yeah. Or have your local party. So I don't know if the state would notify them or you would notify them.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Don't know for the moment, and I'm just add that on the follow-up little sheet, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm legally required to do that. I think that's something, like, you know, with the same thing with the appointing the election officer. Like, do I reach out to them and say, hey, I don't know if I'm legally required to do that or not.
Okay.
Do you have absentee ballots here? If I wanted mine, I'd be gonna actually come by and get one. Is that what?
Well, I think more that it's about returning them. Like, you can return your ballot in person. You can actually even fill out your absentee ballot in person at the registrar's office.
Okay.
So I think the question, if I'm reading correctly, is that
they are entitled to send observers to each day. Is it open?
And receiving
the office
those,
is open and receiving in person absentee ballots.
Yeah.
So, okay, so one you've already voted on, and you can bring it to turn it in.
You can either do that, or you can fill it out.
Yeah. Okay.
At the location.
Right.
Do you have a publication that you provide to election officials regarding rights and responsibilities of observers?
No, but what I am doing is that I'm looking at our website and including some... I want to revamping our website, and yeah, election day. I'm gonna have a tab for election day, and that's gonna fall under that. So forthcoming, yes, but it'll be through the website.
Okay. All right. And this is if no, but you're setting something up. Would you be willing to distribute such a publication that we would prepare based on Virginia law? But you kind of look like you're getting ready to set it up, whole election tab up. So,
correct.
All right. And that's all, unless y'all have any other questions you want to.
I think I went off on enough tangents.
That's okay. You know, we learned about the building codes aren't open to the public. I mean, I learned something myself.
And if you stay around her very long, you'll learn a lot.
So I'm going to send you a follow-up. I'll send it to through your secretary since I got her email, just with a few follow-up items, and we'll update that as we get that information, back from you.
True.
And I'm going to go ahead and end the recording. Thank you so much.
Yes.